Live Energy Transition, episode number 43. Our topic today is investing in technologies. Irina Slav, David Blackman, Armando Cavagna today is receiving Stuart Turley and Gustavo Robichet. Stuart is president and CEO of Sandstone Group. And Gustavo is professor and advisor to the vice president of development and innovation at the Catholic University of Rio de Janeiro. Good morning to all and good afternoon, Irina.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Let me address the first point, and the very strong point for my understanding is the following. Do we have enough technologies for a real and effective energy transition, Stuart?
No.
Well, that was easy.
Next. No, and I think that we have made a mistake in forcing the move to solar and wind without having the investment. And then the ESG movement has forced less drilling in oil and gas. That's going to increase the oil prices in the future. But by printing money to go to renewable with the technology not there, inflation sets in. And I'm now writing a thing on wind energy. I'm finding the mean time between failure is less than 9 years. So when you're taking a look at wind farms, they were saying they're supposed to last 20 and 30. In 2012, they were saying they're lasting 12. I'm finding with the data that I'm finding, they're lasting 8 to 9, if that. So the costs to run a wind farm, the technology to answer your question, Armando, is not there.
Gustavo, what we need to do to... You are mute, Gustavo.
I agree. Am I mute?
No,
we can hear you.
Okay. In my opinion, the technology innovation will play a critical role in helping enterprise survive and thrive in a net zero and more circular economy. I agree with Stu. Energy transition is a complex issue, and the large number of related technology means that often many paths to achieve the same goal exists. Technology performance management will become a critical capability also. And we have oil looks like it will still be long in our lives, but the carbonization technology become essential, necessary, in my opinion.
That's right. Irina and David are critical in these issues. Do you believe in technologies are enough or not yet, David and Irina?
I'll let Irina answer first.
Okay, thank you. No, I don't believe they're enough. And even the International Energy Agency, it's my favorite organization. I'm sorry, I keep referring to it. But in one of their reports, more sober reports, a couple of years ago, perhaps it was, they did say that most of the technology that we need in order to reach net zero goals by 2050 is either in its infancy or has to be yet developed. We're just not there technologically. And a couple of weeks ago, I mocked in my stand-up an advancement in solar panel conversion. A Chinese company had broken the current global record in conversion by boosting it to 27.81%, which means that about 28% of the solar power that passes through the panel is converted to electricity. That's not a whole lot. I don't know how to put it more politely, but that's not a lot. And since we don't hear about such breakthroughs every month or even every year, this tells me that it's not so easy to boost the conversion ratio of solar panels. And wind farms, what Stu said, while this data is emerging that the lifetimes are actually much shorter than advertised, companies keep trying to make them taller and bigger, the turbines, which means more materials, but it doesn't mean a longer lifespan.
That's right, David.
Yeah, that's all right. And of course, the big missing link, I think the most critical missing link for renewables is battery, backup battery technology for wind and solar. You know, we've gone into this enormous heavy subsidization and build out of wind and solar without backup. There is no appreciable backup anywhere on Earth in any real sense right now. And it's all the current technology is all lithium ion, which everyone knows has some pretty significant shortcomings in stationary battery installations. Automobiles different. They're relied on lithium ion because of the weight more than anything else and the ability to pack it into a small space. But for power generation, you know, there are other technologies being developed like vanadium, which is being widely installed now in China, but not adopted nearly quickly enough in the United States, and solid state and semi-solid state lithium technology as well, which dramatically improves on the older lithium ion technology. But again, installing that and scaling it up is a decade-long enterprise. It's not something that happens tomorrow. In the meantime, you have all this wind and solar power now crowding out thermal capacity on power grids everywhere, because politicians are making the decisions and they want to virtue signal about how they're meeting their net zero goals. And so they force wind and solar into the power grids. The grid managers can't manage it properly, don't manage it properly, no. Don't plan for it properly, and you end up with disasters like we had in Texas in February of last year, and like they have in California pretty much every day. In Germany. And So yes, I mean, we've gone into this headlong rush to promote renewables and bankrupt treasuries with trillions of dollars in tax incentives and subsidies for them. And the technology isn't there to make them truly viable. And yeah, inflation has resulted. And we have this enormous global growing energy crisis that exists because of the consequences of all these bad government policies that were so ill-advised, and everyone warned about exactly what would happen. So here we are.
David, hydrogen can replace, and I don't know exactly, batteries position because it's a kind of battery, fluid battery or not?
Hydrogen, can be a fuel. It can be a motor fuel. Theoretically to replace gasoline. But again, the technology there is in its infancy, and it's very expensive to manufacture the hydrogen right now, and it will take decades before it becomes a truly competitive vehicle fuel that competes in the real market with gasoline and diesel. And, you know, I mean, the potential of all of this is tremendous, okay? The question becomes whether you have patience and allow the technology to develop so that it can be implemented affordably and sensibly, or you do what governments in the West have been doing now for the last 20 years and spending trillions and trillions of dollars in printed money, causing inflation, trying to hasten along a transition that the technology is not ready for, and hydrogen's just another example of that. I mean, I don't want to downplay its potential, because the potential is very real, but it's not ready.
Yeah, but I'm very curious. Sorry.
Just a quick note about hydrogen. It's kind of funny. I've been rewatching old Top Gear seasons these days, and I was watching season 12 from 2008. And in this season, the guys presented a Honda, a new Honda at the time, which was supposed to be a game changer because it had a hydrogen fuel cell.
Sure.
That was in 2008. And it hasn't changed the game. I mean, the hydrogen fuel cell, it's 2022 now, and there's still hydrogen fuel cell cars are still a rarity.
Yeah. Yes, awesome. None of this is new. Yeah. I mean, 110 years ago, electric vehicles were 70% of the vehicle fleet in the United States.
Yeah, that's right. Let me show Regina Cohen giving us a good morning. Hello.
Good morning.
And a guy, I don't know if you know him.
Tom Kirkman. Yes, we do. Yeah.
I'd love very good friend, Tom.
I'd love to give a shout out to Tom. I truly appreciate Tom. Your industry thought leadership, and I really enjoy following you. So I just want to give you a shout out.
I second that motion. Yes.
Yeah, I'm a fan too.
He is talking about perpetual motion windmills.
Could solve the energy transition hiccups. Too bad perpetual motion is not possible. Meanwhile, wind energy remains economically a money loser and unsustainable without government subsidies, and we all know that's true.
Yeah,
interesting. Interesting. This is Tom. And grand finale is bringing us another thought. Hydrogen.
So many examples of technological ineptitude and lack of forethought. At what point does the conversation shift from gross stupidity to intentional evil in the attempt to fight climate change? Subject I've touched on myself many times.
The big question of our time.
Yeah, that's right.
Tom, Stu, you have something you wanted to say on that?
Oh, no. What a grand finale. What a great point. Armando and I were just talking about that.
Exactly. Yeah, but let me go to another very important point. It's a curiosity for me. And starting with Gustavo, if he allowed me. The role of governments in this transition. What the role of the government, the state, the technologies, let's say directions for the energy transition, Gustavo, for your opinion?
In my opinion, the government must understand the power that they have in regulations, in investments, and also to foster some initiatives that can, in the near future, not near, as we have discussed, be alternatives to. But this is a complex issue. Irina have talked about it in the past initiatives, and I think that everyone here can complement.
Yeah. Stuart, do you like government interventions? What do you see market and government in this energy transition?
I'm going to be honest with you. No. And here's the... I learned from Irina by just abruptness, and I totally respect that. I learned from David from being just boring and really factual. So government, between all that, you guys are rock stars. But government intervention, kind of like Deborah Wald over at Green Lily Energy, they are based out of the mother country is in Europe. They can make biodiesel, they can make hydrogen, they can make nitrogen and fuel by renewables without government intervention or tax deductions or tax incentives, and they're market priced good. That to me is how we need to go. Governments that we just talked about all this, governments that put all this money in. And David, you hit a great point. Sorry, I didn't mean to compliment you. But a great point is the grid. It's the grid, stupid. Wait. I mean, renewables cannot hold that. And I believe that, and I could be wrong, Irina has to fact check me all the time. And that is, when you take a look at wind farms, a young lady I just interviewed a little while ago said that you need 180% more wind or solar in order to make up for the difference. It's 20% is the backup capacity normally for a grid. You throw an extra 20% extra kilowatt availability standby. Now you need 200%. So if you're putting a renewable source there instead of a wind tower to a amount of gigawatt output for a natural gas, you got to have 179 more wind turbines in order to equate the output of a natural gas.
Yeah.
And correct me if I got that wrong. I may have dreamed that, but.
No, you're real right.
Irina, the crisis of energy are becoming worse in 2023. Why?
Because there's no Russian gas for Europe. Well, there is some, but
there's no gas today. It's the same, no? Why is it becoming worse?
Well, because Europe stocked up on Russian gas this year, while most of the pipelines were still running, but they won't be running next year. So they'll need to buy more LNG, and it remains to be seen whether there will be enough LNG produced that Europe could buy. But even before next year, did you hear that the UK is ordering the restart of its coal plants because the wind's not blowing? Shockingly, in the current weather conditions.
Hard to imagine, yes.
In the country, yeah.
It's not the
and
same.
And they don't have this backup that Stu was talking about, which is completely right. There's research that's been done and calculations that if you want to rely on renewables, you need a lot of redundant capacity, of backup capacity to make up for the low conversion ratio.
Is it the same United States, David? I mean, are becoming worse for 2023? Than today?
Well, it depends on a lot of different factors. Just in terms of where the oil price goes, which I suspect we're going to have another spike in oil prices after the first of the year, assuming China does continue to ease these zero COVID policies and demand comes back over there. But yeah, I mean, anytime oil prices go up in the United States, then energy becomes more expensive. Natural gas prices, though, in the United States, the domestic prices for natural gas, it now appears could ease somewhat next year. And that, you know, would have the effect because we generate over 40% of our electricity in the United States with natural gas these days. That would potentially lower energy costs for most Americans in power generation and home heating. But in transportation, it all just depends on where the price of oil and gas, price of oil goes. And of course, the other wild card is public policy and what the Biden administration decides to do next year for an encore after its ham-handed approach this year. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, let me go to Stuart with this question from JB.
Whatever the overcapacity of renewable energy, unless we have sufficient storage, we need 100% of the power sources we have today.
Sure.
It is madness to rely on renewables. Yes, sir. Yes.
Yes, great question. We need storage. David, you brought that up, and we really do need it. David, you interviewed as well as me,
Tom Jensen from Fryer Battery, yes. And he's a really, you know, brilliant guy. Go ahead.
No, I mean, your interview was phenomenal. And so was mine. Mine was better than yours.
Yours was better, yes.
Yeah, but, you know. but when you sit back and think, Fryer Battery now has renewable batteries that they can recycle. That, mm-hmm. to me, means energy storage is plausible. They're building a gigafactory. Thank you. You know, I almost feel like Christopher Lloyd at 10.1 gigawatts. But that is going in Georgia. And hats off to Fry Energy for creating what is one of my hot buttons, a renewable battery for being able to store energy.
Right.
So grand finale, we need to have an all-encompassing power strategy to get the lowest cost kilowatt per hour to all people of the planet in order to elevate them out of poverty, and we ain't doing it.
So there was an interesting thing over the weekend that happened. A fellow named Amos Hochstein, a millennial advisor to President Biden, who still lives with his parents and is happy about it, actually criticized ESG investors for not investing enough in oil and gas upstream projects in the United States. And I found that to be a fascinating statement coming from an advisor in the White House, because I think there's probably a growing recognition now in the White House about exactly what we've been talking about here today, that all of these alternatives to oil and gas are not ready, and we actually are going to need more affordable oil and natural gas in the United States to power our economy. If the economy is going to perform reasonably well in Biden's last 2 years of this first term. So I just wanted to point that out and make everyone aware of that, because it was really fascinating thing too.
Yeah.
Irina wrote an article today or yesterday, I don't know, about plastics.
Today, yeah.
And let me ask you, which technologies, which technologies do you need to transform renewables in petrochemicals like we have for oil today?
Well, I'm not even close to having the qualifications about commenting, but I would speculate that it's impossible because petrochemicals are made from, you know, physical materials, like the petroleum jelly we use at home for chapped lips and things like that. You can't make this from electricity.
Oh, yeah. But from wind and solar, yes, impossible.
Right, and the electricity has to be created by some engine that is powered by some other source, which is... Yeah.
It's a second source, a primary source, no?
Electricity doesn't just appear.
Secondary, yeah.
It doesn't
just... Yeah, just like solar panels don't spontaneously self-create.
Right, exactly.
Stuart, do you see any, Stuart and Gustavo, do you see any, technology that can be a disruption that's maybe coming?
Gustavo, go ahead.
One guess is the output of the sugarcane alcohol is being used with several experiments to produce alternative plastic materials. This is one example, but we need to have the secondary outputs to understand what is the role and if it will be scalable. But I think that in the near future we don't have alternatives.
You mean ethanol, biodiesel, biofuels that can become can be transformed for this products that oil nowadays can be transformed.
It
makes sense to make ethanol with sugar cane because it can be done very efficiently and cheaply, unlike in the United States where we're doing it with corn, which is very expensive, and in many cases in many of these factories that make it, it absorbs as much energy as it produces, and it makes no sense at all. But with sugar cane, you know, it's an entirely different thing.
You know, Gustavo, you make a fantastic point. And personally, I think how many landfills are around the world? And you can turn that into biofuel. That is where it is. The U.S. and David, ethanol is bad out of corn. It takes more energy in order to make biodiesel in the U.S. and and ethanol than it's worth. Biodiesel in the U.S. is $2 more a gallon for stupidity. I mean, biodiesel. But if we used the things out of the landfill, it would actually be cheaper. So, you know,
But there's a problem. You know, There's a problem with that. There's a lot of plastics in those landfills. And even Greenpeace just told us that we should stop separating our, you know, our garbage. We should just dump it all in one place because only a small portion of the plastics we throw away actually get recycled. So, you know, those landfills are full of plastics.
Yeah.
We can't win, Stu. We can't win.
And wind turbines.
That's true. Yeah. But you can produce, you know, I mean, here in the United States, waste management and other big waste management companies are really growing that part of their segment of their business to recover, you know, natural gas from these big landfills. I mean, there's one just 2 miles from my house, actually, here south of Fort Worth. And, you know, it's very efficient. And it, as long as you're close enough to a pipeline to make it economic to sell the gas into the pipeline, it's entirely plausible. And so they're doing a lot of that here in the United States. It's real
cool. I got an idea. Let's have all the politicians with their hot air blow all the wind turbines.
A lot to blow.
Sorry.
So many ones. Let's go to the last point, please, to see the vision of each one, please. Do expect a long transition? And does it depend on the technologies that we have today and we can have tomorrow? So how long can you see the transition, Gustavo?
I think that we will keep on a continuum of transition, Cavanha, because we will need to understand the many perspectives of those alternatives. And I think that this will not have an end. I'm sorry, I don't have an answer to
your question. Good answer. Stuart, do you see a long, 20 years, 50 years? How long will we stay with oil in this world?
Yes. They'll always need some oil. And right now there are a few trillion between friends, but we need trillions of dollars invested in the, just like your story, David, we need trillions invested in oil and gas just to meet normal decline curves, not, you know, demand destruction, not anything else. We're not investing. So, Gustavo, you're dead on right. I think it's, I hate to put a number there because it's going to be a long time. You can't make plastics out of nuclear energy yet.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
David, how do you see this time?
Oh, I completely agree with Gustavo. I think this is, and it is largely because there's no consensus on this in any real sense. I mean, you know, we claim there's this 97% consensus about which way to go, but that's really not true. And the laws of physics and thermodynamics, you know, have a different opinion. And so we're going to continue to see governments trying to force us down a road that is not ready to be driven down. And in the meantime, we're going to have to continue to have, I mean, the greatest example of all of this, that I don't remember who pointed out earlier, is that Germany and England are restarting their coal plants. We have record coal use globally this year. We have record burning of wood for energy, a 16th century technology this year. So you can't tell me that this transition is progressing as the geniuses at the EU and the IEA think it should. And so it's going to be a long-term ongoing thing for the rest of all of our lifetimes.
Yeah. Irina, to close our thoughts, is with you, please.
Well, I really have nothing substantial to add to what was already said. It will be a permanent transition for as long as I can, you know, see in the future, like the dance of the crab, if you like, a step forward, a step sideways, perhaps a couple of steps back. So it's not going to be a straightforward and, you know, going from fossil fuels to electricity, not even in 50 years.
As said JB, 100 years.
100 years, if we're lucky or unlucky, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Yeah. Even that's short enough.
David and Irina, was a tremendous pleasure to be with you all today, and of course with special guests Gustavo and Stuart. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for joining us, gentlemen.
Have a great week.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.